Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I'm ashamed to tell you how much time I spent preparing today's class. I was cracking my head open trying to figure this out, and I'm really excited because I think I discovered something huge. Certainly, I never had a clue of what I'm about to tell you today. And the people, some people that I spoke to, they were kind of shocked also. They never thought of this thing too. Okay, with that little preface, welcome aboard. Quantum tunneling. There's going to be some quantum physics in today's class. Not that I know much about quantum physics, but I know something about Gemara. And I think that modern-day quantum physics may have provided an equation with which we can solve something extraordinary that our sages spoke about thousands of years ago. That should be intriguing. Stay with me, because it's going to take a while for us to get there. We're on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, page 111, side A, Mesechet Ketubot. This is the 13th chapter of a remarkable tractate of Talmud that is referred to in the yeshiva world as Shas Katan, because it is said to contain all the topics in the entire Talmud are found in some way, microcosmic or more, in this Masechet. And there's a lot about the importance and the virtues, the beauty, and the attributes of the Holy Land of Israel. And that leads us into a fascinating and deeply insightful discussion in the Gemara about the resurrection. That's the 13th principle of our Jewish faith. It's a principle of our Jewish faith that fuels the second bracha of the Amidah, of our daily Shmon Esrei. A Torah Jew, thrice daily, says the words Mechaya HaMesim. And on Rosh Chodesh, he says it four times. And the same is true at Yom Tov, and on Yom Kippur, five times. So this is a big deal. It's a big deal. And in our previous episode, we talked about some interesting basics. You couldn't understand this without listening or watching the previous episode, but it's very helpful to know where we came from. I'm just going to quickly recap so you have an appreciation of where we were and where we are now. And this will, I think, enable everybody to have a good grasp on the subject matter. So there's this persistent tradition that the resurrection, it's an Israeli thing. Forget about the startup nation. We're the revival nation. the resurrection nation. That's where Tchias HaMesim is going to happen. And that, of course, was the subject of our previous episode, the land of the living. So the land of the living, that's where people come back to life. That's where the source of life is. In our previous episode, I quoted teachings of the Maharal and other of the great commentaries who explain why it is that life and the land are uniquely conjoined. And then there's this tradition that everybody rises. Doesn't matter where you're interred. And in the way our Gemara introduces this, we have Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo. And the conversation goes back and forth. And Rabbi Elazar says, okay, so Mesim Shebuchotz La'aretz Einem Choyim, the dead who are buried outside of Israel, they're gone, they're not coming back. And he brings a proof. And Rabbi Abba Bar Mamo counters this and he says, well, how would you explain another verse? Now remember, as I talked about in the previous episode, it's not by dint or virtue of the verses that we're coming to these conclusions. These are pre-received traditions. And even in Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel's arguments, or Arba Memel, we see a profound distinction between the resurrection as it will take place in the land of Israel and the resurrection as it will take place outside the land of Israel, meaning those who are interred in the land or elsewhere in the diaspora. The Torah uses different terminology, even in Rabbi Abba Memel's understanding. So there is certainly a difference. It seems that everybody has a tradition about something about you know, the land of Israel and as the land of the living. That's a persistent tradition. But at the same time, there seems also to be this idea that the righteous will rise, no matter where they're going to be buried. But this is—it's not clear. So we kind of like back and forth. The arguments are this counter arguments, and then what one verse seems to indicate, according to one school of thought, and then another verse is quoted, and we're going back and forth in these verses. And the last thing the Gemara says is, and I'm going to read it. It's about halfway through the wide lines on the bottom of the page, in Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. So it's probably, I don't know, 111 A5 or A4 or A5 in the art school version or something like that. Or in the Evan Israel Steinsaltz version. What? You're good. Okay, whatever. So somewhere on the bottom over there. The Gemara interjects and says, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, after telling us that even the simplest of people, most unlettered, and by the way, least sophisticated spiritually, because we talked about the idea of Eved and Shivcha, talked about somebody who's partially Jewish, and you have to watch a previous episode to understand that, that if they live in Eretz Yisrael, they too will merit the resurrection. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Kol ha-mahalech arba amas be'Eretz Yisrael, muftach lei shehu ben olam haba. As long as you have walked for 6 feet in the land of Israel, then you are guaranteed a portion in the world to come. By the way, there's a lot of discussion about this. Some of the commentaries maintain you walked and died there, not walked and left. But the point is, even if you just came and you walked 4 feet and then you were felled, even then you would still have a portion in the world to come. But at any rate, there is this emphasis on the importance, the sanctity, and the spiritual power of the land of Israel. And the understanding is that the merit of Eretz Yisrael serves to accelerate or emphasize, like I guess, to energize the concept of the resurrection. In the words of the Marsha, and this is actually very important what I'm now saying. In the words of the Marsha, he says in his commentary, and we read this in the previous episode, we emphasized this. He says, if you're talking about Mesim, Be'eretz Yisrael, so he says, Bezechus Eretz Yisrael, in the merit of the land of Israel, Yichyu, then the people will live. But Bechutz La'aretz, in the diaspora, outside of the borders of the sacred land of Israel, by the way, this has nothing to do with statehood or self-determination. Enormous swaths of what the world calls Syria and Lebanon and Jordan are Eretz Yisrael. But there's nothing to do with secular designations or what the world chooses to recognize or not. This has to do with the inherent holiness from Hashem, from Torah. So if you're buried in Chutz La'aretz, then in that case, the Torah uses different terminology. The scripture used the terminology of a corpse or a body instead of the deceased in a less respectful way, because ein zuchut chutz la'aretz gorma, because the merit of the diaspora doesn't exist. There is no merit. There's no merit in any other land. The only land that has inherent merit is the land of Eretz Yisrael. What do you have, though? All you have is zuchutz atzmo, one's own merit. So if you're in Eretz Yisrael, you can rise by virtue of the land of Eretz Yisrael. If you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, you can rise by your own virtue, but not by the virtue of the land. I mean, Canada's a great country, but it doesn't do anything for you in the time of the resurrection. It doesn't work that way. So this then is the way we should understand the flow of the Gemara, the cadence of the Gemara. The Gemara says, you see that the schus, that the merit of Eretz Yisrael is so powerful that even a shivcha, Eved v'shivcha, even people who don't have that much merit on their own, if they live in the land of Israel, they will merit the resurrection. And the emphasis, that's why we have this teaching of Kala Mahalech, Arba Ames Be'eretz Yisrael, even though this is a discussion about the resurrection, about those who will live again, we interject with a teaching for Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, you should know, Kala Mahalech, Arba Ames Be'eretz Yisrael, if one only walks the distance of what's approximately 6 feet, 4 cubits, muftach lei shuban elam haba, that he's already guaranteed, promised a portion in the eternity, in the future, which is a euphemism for the resurrection. So the Gemara now returns, and this is what we're up to now. The Gemara returns to the original conversation. It's okay, fine. So Rabbi Abba Memel has this idea that Mesim everywhere are going to come back to life. But Rabbi Elazar doesn't seem so sure. Rabbi Abba Memel's quite sure, and they have different ways of interpreting the verses. But Rabbi Elazar's, no, he said, no, that's all the verses that we brought to prove that those who lived will live again, and the fact that the Torah uses different verbiage. So Rabbi Elazar said that that doesn't have to refer to the dead outside of Israel. That could simply refer to people who were stillborn, humans who never lived, so they can't have their own merit. Nonetheless, they will rise. That's why the Torah uses a different expression. But Rabbi Elazar seems adamant in at this point in saying, standing by his original statement, we receive the tradition, Meitim shebechutz la'aretz einom chayim. If you don't end up getting buried in Israel, you're done, you're toast, you're not coming back to life. So the Gemara comes along and says, really? Ule Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, pardon me, and according to Rabbi Elazar, tzadikim shebechutz la'aretz einam chayim. Does he really believe that? Righteous people, good people. Now, based on the Maharsha's explanation, people who have their own merit. Yes, they don't have the merit of being buried in Eretz Yisrael. It's a merit. It's a zechut. They don't have that merit. They're buried in Canada. Okay. But just because you're buried outside of Israel, all of your merits are naught? A person who, chas v'shalom, violates every mitzvah in the Torah but lives in Israel, which is a mitzvah. He does that one mitzvah and he gets buried in Israel. Oh, that's no problem. Highway to heaven. You're eternity, man. You're going to be dancing.
Does that have anything to do with the ingathering? Like we're supposed to come to Eretz Israel?
But that's a very good question, doctor. But the think about it. The ingathering, as we understand it, is those who are alive. The resurrection is in the next age. It's the next era. Mm-hmm. According to the Zohar, 40 years later it could be.
But
so it's
there,
a later, but the question is, you have to be alive. You got to be alive to get resurrected.
But those, that have already passed.
Those who are alive are going to come back. But if you're dead, you're finished. So this is the question of the Gemara. Okay, they don't have the merit of Eretz Yisrael, but they do have the merit of who they are. The Bala Afla really develops this question in a much, much more, let's shall we say, a poignant and powerful way. He says, Bala Afla says like this. It would be virtually impossible to suggest that the righteous aren't going to rise if they aren't buried in Israel. Because, he says, we have a famous Gemara, which is found in the beginning of the chapter Chelek, Perek Chelek in Sanhedrin. In that chapter of Sanhedrin, the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, it says, the Gemara asks, Gemara opens up, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek Leilam Haba, all of Israel has a portion of the world to come, which is understood to be a slice of eternity, the resurrection. And then the Gemara on the next page starts saying, okay, so this resurrection thing that people are always speaking about, do we have any proof in the Torah? I mean, because if it's true, it probably should be alluded to in the Torah itself. And the Gemara says, well, we actually do have proof. And the proof is that it says they will give the truma, the offering, that which is lifted from the grain, the agriculture, the produce of the land of Israel from the harvest. And you give, let's say for argument's sake, 2% of that entire harvest gets given to the Kohen. And it's called truma, which means to lift or to heave. And it says, "V'nasatem imenu es trumas Hashem la'Aaron ha'Kohen." They'll give the truma of God to Aaron, the high priest. And the Gemara says, "Remez min ha'Torah l'tchias ha'Mesim." That's a clear allusion in the Torah itself to the resurrection, because the Torah says that Aaron is going to receive truma. But last we checked, Aaron didn't make it to the land of Israel. He passed over 6 months before Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was buried on a mountain outside of biblical Israel called Hor HaHor, and Aaron doesn't make it to Israel. And neither does Moshe. So how are you going to give, how is this verse ever fulfilled? The Torah, everything the Torah says was, is, or will be. Well, that wasn't, and it isn't, so it will be. But how will it be? If Aaron HaKohen is no longer with us, how will it be? So the Gemara says, obviously, it means that Aaron HaKohen will be there. Now, it's interesting that there's a discussion about the supremely righteous, maybe more ordinary people, and perhaps this is the reason that the Gemara gives another proof. The Gemara says, you want another proof? It says, "Az Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael." Then Moses and the children of Israel will sing. Well, they sang. It should have said, "Az Shor." They sang. Why does it say Yashir? They will sing in the futuristic, so to speak, iteration. And the answer is because they'll be back to sing again. Moshe and Bnei Yisrael. Not all the Bnei Yisrael with such big tzaddikim. Read the book of Numbers. You'll find out yourself that lots of these people were quite rebellious and seditious, and some of them were struck down by God for their sins. But they're going to live again. So Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't make it to sing again yet, but Torah says he's going to sing again. And then the Gemara goes on to say, a proof from the words v'kam, the Pasuk says you're going to repose with your ancestors and you're going to rise. And the Sadducees didn't like the proof, and the Roman philosophers didn't like that proof. They said v'kam could refer to the second half of the verse. At any rate, the point is, the Gemara clearly states that people buried outside the land of Israel are going to be resurrected. So whether you look at this, and I don't think that the Baal HaFla is saying something inherently different than the Marsha. Marsha doesn't even say it to explain the question of the Gemara. I'm explaining the question of Gemara in along the lines of logic that the Marsha previously introduced. I mean, the question basically could be asked on two levels. Number one, logically speaking, it doesn't make sense to say that the most righteous people buried outside of Israel won't get up because they're not in Israel. Because this business of resurrection has everything to do with being meritorious. And this Talmud established that being buried in Israel, or more importantly, living in Israel and even dying and being buried in Israel is a meritorious thing. And because it's meritorious, so that's why there's going to be a resurrection. So how does that work? One mitzvah, the person lived in Israel. No Shabbat, no Kashrut, no Tefillin, no Mezuzah, maybe no Ahavat Yisrael, I don't know, but he lived in Israel. And then he died in Israel, and he was buried in Israel. No problem. You're going to get up again. Really? But this fellow doesn't have that many merits. He lived in Israel. That's a big deal. He got buried in Israel. That's impressive. That's a zechut. Okay, so the zechut, the merit of something good, leads us into that future reality. And a person who spent his whole life devoting himself every waking moment to the service of God with extraordinary sacrifice and commitment and devotion, no good. No, you don't have that merit. Okay, I don't have that merit, but I have like a couple of other merits. Well, sorry, that doesn't count. That actually makes no sense. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And besides the fact that it doesn't make sense, logically, the Baal HaFla says, it contradicts what the Gemara tells us. The Gemara clearly identifies people who lived, died, and will live again. And they weren't buried in Israel. So how are we to understand this? And this is all just getting us into position, because now we're going to get into some really heavy stuff. This is where the quantum tunneling is going to play in. So the Gemara says, Omar Rabbi Eloi. Rabbi Eloi, he responds, and he says, well, they will live again. Like before I go to the continuation of the Gemara, I want to read Rashi. Rashi just punctuates the words of the Gemara. Sometimes Rashi does that. The Gemara doesn't have any punctuation. The Gemara doesn't have question marks and exclamation marks, even really periods or commas. So sometimes Rashi just tells you how to read the word. Read it like a question. So the Rashi says, Einam Chaim could be read as a statement. Those outside of Israel, they won't live. That's originally the way these words were stated by Rabbi Elazar. But now, the Gemara is repeating the same thing, Einam Chaim, Bitmiya, with a question. In other words, read that, Einam Chaim? Seriously? They're not going to live again? Yeah, that makes no sense. One word, Bitmiya. So the Gemara answers, Omar Rabbi Eloi says, they will live, but al yedei Gilgul. They're going to live by rolling. The word Gilgul literally means to roll. Now, this is a word that's used in a variety of different ways in Talmudic and Midrashic literature. It comes in its origin, at its root source, from the word galgal, which means a wheel. But it's used in so many different tenses and iterations. It's used in the formation of dough, because you roll a ball of dough. It's used in something that's going to be legally applied to a person in the language Gilgul Shvua, like a person's obligated to take an oath. Now we're going to add other oaths, so a cascade of oaths. One is going to be the cause of another. It's like a wheel. Wheels turn. You know, the wheel keeps turning. But it's used in a variety of ways. So we don't know if this means you turn into a wheel. We don't know what that means, turning into a wheel. But like this Gilgul, there's Mizgalgalim, there's something round. I would tell you to think of like a screwdriver motion. But there's something coming out, kind of a tunneling. Mizgalgalim ha'atzamais, the bones are going to roll or tunnel ad Eretz Yisrael, till the land of Israel. That could be a far journey from Canada, you know. A long way off. And then v'choyin sham, and then they're going to live there. That's what the Gemara says. That's how Rashi explains the Gemara.
And it's talking physically, not metaphorically.
The Gemara seems to be talking physically, because if the resurrection is physical, if death is physical and the resurrection is physical, then the way you get there probably also has to be physical.
Okay.
Right? But of course, this is very hard to understand, because what in heaven does that mean? What does it mean? Does it mean there's going to be a tunnel and you roll like a bowling ball? I mean, it gets pretty hot underneath the Earth's crust. Are we going to have to go under the Atlantic and then pop up in Israel? How exactly is that going to work? But that's what Rashi says. The Gemara is not happy. The Gemara is not happy. What bothers the Gemara? And this is where my head started going crazy. This is where I couldn't make heads or tails of this. Gemara says, Maskifla Reb Abba Sala Rava. Rava. By the way, this is the only time Reb Abba Sala Rava shows up in the entirety of the Gemara. I don't believe there's another place his name is ever mentioned. I don't even know anything about him. I actually tried to research. I couldn't find anything about him. But this is the one place he's mentioned. So Reb Abba Sala Rava said, something doesn't sound right. He says, Gilgul litzadikim tsaru. This rolling, this tunneling, it sounds like a very painful process. It sounds very painful. So something's not adding up. Or maybe it's fun. Maybe it's like a roller coaster. How do you know, Reb Abba Sala? How do you know? Did you ever do this? Makes a statement. Gilgul tzadikim tsaru. That's painful. No good. It's painful. So Abaya says, Reb Abba, that's a really good point you make. So here's the answer. The answer is Mechilot Nasulahem Bekarka. There's going to be tunnels. Tunnels opening up underneath the ground. And that's how they're going to get there. And Rashi says, tunnels? Rashi says, yep, tunnels. So what's going to happen is Mechilot Nasulahem Bekarka, V'oim Dinal Raglehem. They're going to stand up. It's going to be a big tunnel, not a little tunnel. With headspace. Big tunnel. They stand up. They're going to walk in these tunnels. Or go in these tunnels. And there it's Yisrael till they get to Israel. And that's where they emerge. So I asked somebody today. I said to them, how does this sound for like a fun activity? I'm going to have you walk about 5,000 miles in a subterranean highway. Yeah, like a couple of hundred feet maybe beneath the earth. Just you walk for 5,000 miles. How much fun does that sound like? Does that sound like fun? He said no. I said, I don't think it's fun either. Does it sound painful? Sounds pretty painful. Sounds like a four-year prison sentence. All right, maybe we're going to have a really fast train. It's still not fun. It's still a long ways to go without any sunlight. So what did the other guys look like? The first people, the non-tzaddikim, they're going to have Gilgal. They're going to go rolling. The other people, they're going to be walking. But they can't emerge. They can't leave the ground. You got to stay on the ground till you get to the land of Israel. This is before the Americas were discovered. Now we got to go under the ocean too. What the heaven does this mean? What is going on here? Now, the Gemara introduces a whole other thing over here, which doesn't seem to help very much. It just makes it more mysterious. The Gemara says, you should know that this is going to explain something. We see with Father Jacob that he said, Unasasani me Mitzrayim, I want you to carry me from Egypt. Ukvartani bekvuratam, you bury me in their burial grounds, in their burial crypt. He's talking about the burial grounds of Ma'arat HaMachpelah, of the Machpelah cave, where Avraham and Yitzchak, Yaakov's father and respective grandfather, and where his wife Leah, and where his mother and grandmother are buried. So you take me there. That's what Yaakov's request was. Amar Karna, Sakarna said, Dvarim Begoy, this is mysterious. What does this mean, Dvarim Begoy? Rashi says, Yesh kan dvorim mustorim. There's something very mysterious going on here, B'davazeh. V'tzarech losis lahem leiv. You've got to really pay attention to this. Something very mysterious is happening here. It's not just an ordinary request. Yaakov says, I want you to bury me in my family burial grounds. No. There's something much more profound. And he says, Yodei ahoya yayin kevavinu shetzadeh gomor. Yaakov knew he's a complete tzaddik, a perfect tzaddik. So he says, tell me something. Imesim shebechutz la'aretz chayim, if those who are outside of Israel are going to come back to life, lama hitriach hezbonov, then why did he make such demands, extraordinary demands of Yosef, which almost cost Yosef his crown and his job? It was such a difficult thing to pull off. Why did he make them crazy for? What's the difference where you repose? The main thing is when Mashiach comes, you get up and you live again. And if it's so easy, and if a tunnel opens up, what's the issue? So the Gemara says, Shema lo yizke lemechilas. Yaakov was worried. He said, maybe I won't merit. And then the Gemara goes on to say, Kayetze bedavar, something else we see. Vayash by Yosef is b'nei Yisrael. Yosef makes the Jewish people take an oath. He says, I know you're never going to be able to get my body out of Egypt. I get that. But when you leave, take me with you. And the Egyptians knew all about this. So they created this upside down pyramid. And they filled it with water. And they buried Yosef in a lead coffin that sank to the bottom. And they said, ha ha ha, now if you can find him and get him out of here, I guess you'll leave then. In other words, anchoring the Jewish people in Mitzrayim forever, because they made an oath they'd never leave without Yosef. It's a story in and of itself, how Moshe Rabbeinu miraculously is able to harvest this coffin from the depths of that watery grave, and how he does extract Yosef's coffin, and they do carry it. The Torah openly tells us that they were carrying Yosef's coffin. So the Omer Rabbi Chanina Dvarim Begoy, something very mysterious is going on here. This is not ordinary. Why? Yosef knows he's a perfect tzaddik. If those buried outside of Israel are going to live, then why did he place such a burden upon his brothers and their descendants? Arba meis parsa, 400 farsangs, which is the difference of traveling all the way from Mitzrayim to the land of Israel. And the answer, the Gemara says, Shema leyizke lemechilis. Maybe he wouldn't merit these tunnels. So the ebb and flow of the Gemara is such. Those outside of Israel are going to experience the resurrection. Will they experience the resurrection? In the land of Israel. How will they get there? Oh, that's painful. They have to tunnel their way through. But if you're a tzaddik, no problem. You have a delightful underground journey. You can get to travel thousands of miles in a tunnel. So then why was Yaakov and Yosef insistent that they be buried in the land of Israel? Oh, very simple, because they were afraid. Maybe we're not righteous enough. Maybe we won't get a tunnel. Maybe we'll have to tunnel through instead of getting a tunnel made for us. And if we have to tunnel through, it's going to be much, much worse. So you better take me to Israel. I mean, that's the basic upshot of the Gemara. And I don't understand this. Like, I don't know what's going on there. What is the difference between being in a tunnel and what is the difference between tunneling? One sounds horrible, that's not a big deal. What does all this mean? Okay, so our journey begins. First off, we have this same Gemara that shows up in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Very similar Gemara, slight difference. It's found in Maseches Kelim, in Perek Eini Aser, which is the ninth chapter, Maseches Kelayim, pardon me, which is about forbidden mixtures. And one of the things which Jewish people are not allowed to mix together is wool and linen and clothing. And the Gemara tells us that you can bury your dead in shrouds made of wool and linen, because once you're dead, there's no more mitzvahs. And then from there, the Gemara gets into the conversation, and what's going to happen? What's going to happen at the time of the resurrection? Do they get up with the same clothing or not with the same clothing? And how does all that work? So the Gemara says, that the land of Israel is a land of life. It's a land of life. How do we know it's a land of life? Because we have the story with Yaakov. It says, Unasasani mimitzrayim, ukvartani bekvuratam. It's written with regard to Jacob. I'm going to lie down with my fathers, and you transport me out of this place. You take me to Israel. Bury me in their tomb. So the obvious question, as we said, why did Yaakov force Yosef to go through such lengths? Why was it so important for him to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara says, the reason that Yaakov Avinu placed such of what we would call an emphasis. The Gemara says, Yaakov, kol hein dohu, mal menaki. What's the difference? Wherever he is, what's he missing? Like, what's the issue? What do you care where you're buried? People say, I want to have a nice grave. Make sure there's a tree next to my grave. I once had somebody said to me, how do I get a tree? I'm like, what's the difference? You're in the ground. I want it to be nice, a nice view. Nice view of what? A grave is a grave. Rich man, poor man, it's no difference. A grave is a grave. What difference does it make? What is where you're buried? Oh, they're buried in Israel. What do you think? They have different worms there. Sand is sand, soil is soil. What difference does it make? So Reb Lezer says, Dvarim Begav, there's something here. There's some kind of mystery here. Dvarim Begav, the Reb Eliyahu Fulda, was one of the early Rishonim. Not early, late Rishonim, 15th, 16th century. He writes in his commentary, what does it mean, Dvarim Begav? He says, Yesh Dvar Nister Bedavar Zeh, there's something mysterious here. Something mysterious going on. I'm not sure what it is, but something mysterious is going on over here. And then the Gemara says that Rabbi Hanina said, Dvarim Begav, something's going on here. Rabbi Shua ben Levi said, Dvarim Begav, something here. So the Gemara says, okay, everybody says it's mysterious. Could you please explain, like, what is the issue? What's so mysterious? Everybody's Dvarim Begav, Dvarim Begav. So the Gemara says, okay, what is the mystery? What's the question? Ma Dvarim Begav. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish says, it goes like this. This is the hidden issue. This is the beneath the surface issue. Shimon ben Lakish says, the pasuk says, Es halech lifnei Hashem, I will walk before God, be'artzot hachayim, in the land of life, or the land of the living. So the Gemara says, Halo ein artzot hachayim, elatzur, v'chaver yisrael. The land of living would refer to places like Tyre and the Kesaron and the Caesarea, because this is a place where there's abundance. There was abundance over there. There was a very strong economy in these places. and whatever was available. What does it mean, the land of the living? Okay. What does it mean when Eretz Yisrael is called the land of the living? Some parts of Israel were prospering, and many parts of Israel were not prospering. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what this means. When we speak about the land that is Israel, it's not about Taman Zula, Taman Seva, that here there's inexpensive, and there one joys abundance. That's not what it's about. Ibshim bin Lakish B'Shem Bakapara says, the land of the living means Eretz Shemeseha Chayin, the land in which the dead will live again. And here the Yerushalmi adds the word Chayin Tchila, will live first, will be the first to be resurrected. L'Maisa Mashiach. And the Gemara says, Umatam Noisin Aleha. Matam, what's the reason for this? And the Gemara quotes a verse which we have talked about previously already. Nosen neshama la'amala. Hashem says, I give a soul to the people upon it, upon the land of Israel. We talked about this verse in the previous episode. So the Gemara comes along and says, Elo me'ata. Well, if I heard you right, Rabbi Seinu shebegoyle hefsidu. You mean our spiritual leadership outside of Israel is now going to lose? What, because they were worried about Jews living outside of Israel, because they traveled to provide for Jewish communities that were distant, they're going to lose out. They're not going to be resurrected. There was a great sage. His name was Reb Masya ben Chorosh. He was one of the most pious people ever walked the face of the earth. And he ends up leaving Israel. He goes to Italy. He moves to Rome. Why? Because the Jewish community was in danger of assimilation. So he moved to Rome and spent the rest of his life inspiring, educating. I mean, so he doesn't get to be, because he was buried somewhere in Italy, we don't know where his grave is there, but because of that, he's not going to get up. Rabbi Simoi said, I'll tell you what's going to happen. Tell you what's going to happen, he says. Machlid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifneihem es ha'aretz. God is going to drill into the land. Vehein mizgalgalin kenoides. They're going to proverbially roll. They're going to roll like leather flasks. A noid was a leather flask they used to keep for water. It's like the canteens of antiquity. And then these like leather bags will roll the kivan shemagim l'aretz Yisrael. And once they get to the land of Israel, the Gemara says, nafshon choizres aleihem. Their soul comes back to them. And what's the reason? And the Gemara quotes a verse which we quoted already before. V'hinachti eschem admas adama v'nosati ruchim b'chem v'chiesem. The Gemara says, they will be in the land of Israel, and then I will place my spirit upon them, and they will live again. Now, the Gemara here in the Yerushalmi mentions nothing about people rolling through the land. It doesn't even talk about that. It just talks about these people that will roll through the land and then come to life in Israel. It's only tzaddikim being talked about here. The good news is that the halacha is like the Bavli, not the Yerushalmi. The Babylonian Gemara is much more elaborative and much more exhaustive. And the Gemara in Bavli says clearly that everybody is going to come back to the land of Israel, but the very righteous people are going to have these tunnels. So now it's very, very interesting to note. You look at the comment there, the Pnei Moshe, and he says, what does this mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make these tunnels? The Gemara says, Hifsidu, they lost. So here Pnei Moshe says, read it like, Hifsidu, because they lived outside and got buried outside of Israel. They lost, they're lost. That doesn't make sense. That's not fair. So the Pnei Moshe says, I want you to listen carefully to what I'm saying. Noikev lifneihem es ha'aretz. He's going to drill the land. He's going to hollow out the land. And then he says, va'oisa lehen mechilis, and he's going to make tunnels, tachas ha'karka, underneath the ground. They're going to roll like flasks. Why don't you say roll like a wheel? Why roll like a flask? I don't know. And they're going to roll. And because of this, Yaakov lo ratzo likaver b'chutz l'aretz. Yaakov doesn't want to be buried in the outside of Israel. Why? Shaliyeh le'tzar gilgul mechilis. So according to the Yerushalmi, that journey rolling through the tunnels isn't that much fun. Forget the tunneling. We don't even hear about tunneling here. But just the Jew. Yaakov says, I don't want to be buried in Mitzrayim because then I'm going to have to travel 400 farsangs like a bag of leather and then come up and live. I don't want to do that. So in the Yerushalmi's version, there's no Yaakov saying, I don't know if I'm a tzaddik, I'm not sure, I don't want to have to go in a tunnel, just bring me to Israel. And Yosef saying the same thing. Rabbi Leo Fulda, who is known for his precise nature of his commentary, he uses much less words, and yet he also, when he speaks about this business of Hashem creating those cavernous area in the ground, so Rabbi Leo Fulda says clearly, Machlid, no cave, he's going to drill, hollow out, ve'osalehem, he's going to hollow out and he's going to make a tunnel, tachas hakarka. And clearly, Yaakov doesn't want to have to go through a tunnel. So now we have a Bavli, a Babylonian in Talmud, which is the final word that tells us that everybody's going to tunnel. But tzaddikim are going to have a bigger tunnel, a nicer journey home. So then what's the problem? Yaakov doesn't want to have a delightful subterranean highway ride. It must be fantastic. Well, maybe not. Yeah, it's great. But Yaakov says, I don't know if they can open a highway for me. So because I don't know if they open a highway for me, I'd rather go above ground and lay me to rest there. Yerushalmi says, no. That highway journey ain't no fun. It's terrible. Who wants to roll like a bag of bones? Who wants to do that? Sounds actually very reasonable. Sounds like a lot, makes a lot of sense what the Gemara is saying. I just want to be in Israel, he says. It's clear that you come to life outside of Israel. Now, I want to point out something very, very strange. The Gemara very clearly states that where do you come back to life?
Where?
In Israel. The Bavli doesn't say it as clearly, and Rashi's commentary really threw me for a loop. Because Rashi's commentary was, in the Mechilos, Rashi says, Oimdin al raglehem. They're not rolling. This is Bavli, not the Yerushalmi. No rolling here. Stand up. V'holchem b'mechilos. They're going to walk in the tunnels. Ad Eretz Yisrael. V'shom mevatzvetz in v'yetz. And then they emerge. So the emergence is the same in the Bavli and Yerushalmi. But in the Yerushalmi, they're going to bounce like a ball. Or something like that. Roll like a soccer ball. That's the modern day noid. You want to know what a leather thing looks like? A football, a soccer ball. But Rashi says they're going to stand on their feet and walk.
Everyone or this is tzaddikim?
This is tzaddikim. Everyone else is going to tunnel. And Yaakov's problem wasn't this delightful walk in the hollow of the ground. That's not the problem. Problem is maybe he's not going to get a tunnel. Maybe he's just going to get a tunneling. I don't know what's going on over here.
This is after the process when you physically pass and your neshama has the whole correct.
This is after the process and your physical pass and all that stuff, yeah. Then we have a Medrash Rabbah. And the Medrash Rabbah is found in Parshas Vayechi. And the Medrash Rabbah says, Yaakov Avinu doesn't want to die twice. And he brings a pasuk from Yirmiyahu where it says that they're going to go into captivity, v'sham tamos, v'sham atikover. There you're going to die, and there you're going to get buried. Well, obviously, if you die, then you're going to get buried there. So the Medrash comments on the verse near me, hariyesh b'yod eshtei mises. You die twice. You die in exile, and you get buried in exile. It's like dying twice. And the Medrash Rabbah says, Lafika, that's the reason. Yaakov says to Yosef, I'll not take Barini b'Mitzrayim, don't you bury me here. Omer Rebbe Simon, if that's true, that Yaakov didn't want to be buried in Mitzrayim because he would die twice, meaning he wouldn't get up for the resurrection. Are you telling me that all the tzaddikim buried in the diaspora have lost? So the Medrash says, no. Elamah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so what's God going to do? Aisalem Mechilis. He's going to make these tunnels. Barats in the ground. Va'aisanaisim kima'aris halalu. He's going to make them big caves. It's not going to be just a clear space, not a crawl space. Yeah, nice big tunnel, big cave. A Torah Bora. Vahem is galgalin uboyin. And they're going to, so to speak, roll and come. Now, roll doesn't have to mean roll like a ball, whatever. No. Till they get to the land of Israel, then God will place a spirit of life. Why? Eitz Yosef says, because Eretz Yisrael is holy. That's where neshama can come into this world. That's where it happens. You want life, you go to Israel. That's where the life will come. Because the holiness of Eretz Yisrael parallels the holiness on high. Maharal of Prague, Michal David saying rock and roll. I don't know if that's rock and roll. Maybe that's like the Grateful Dead, maybe. I don't know.
That's pretty good.
So he says, the Maharal says that why would they live in the land of Israel? He said, the land of Israel is the center of the universe. It's the center of the world. And then the outer reaches, not so much life. You go into the heartland. This is where it is. The heartland of the world. That's there. So that's where you live. Okay. Now, Patterns Toronto is asking a very good question. She's saying, why would you care how at all you get there if you're dead? That's an excellent question. That's part of what I'm trying to figure out here. You tunnel, you roll, what difference does it make? You're dead. Well, maybe not. I mean, how much worse could it be to bury somebody? That's not bad. To get buried under all that earth, that's not so bad. But having to go through the earth, that's terrible. What does that mean? If it's so awful, how would you bury somebody? You should freeze them. I mean, like, really, what is going on over here? And by the way, the Medrash quotes a very, very clear verse in Ezekiel 37. And the verse says, Hine ani poteach et kivrotechem. I am going to open your graves. Vahaaleti etchem mikivrotechem. I'm going to take you out of your graves. Veheveti etchem el admat Yisrael. I'm going to bring you to the soil of Israel. Vahachakach venasati ruchi bachem vechiyisem. Then I'm going to put my life, a spirit of life, into you. So, like in the actual pasuk in Yechezkel, which I wanted to share this with you. In the actual pasuk in Yechezkel, so the Radak says, you know, there's a whole dispute in the Gemara whether or not those buried outside of Israel are going to be resurrected. And he says, but here you have a clear verse. So he says, indeed, some will tell you, some of the sages said, that you would roll in the ground in tunnels. You're going to tunnel your way there. And he says, this verse seems to be very clear to me, says Radak. It's a very clear proof. It's interesting, the Gemara doesn't quote this verse. Our Gemara never quotes this verse. God says to the Jewish people, this is Ezekiel. He's speaking to the people who are going to be in exile. He says, I am going to open your graves and I'm going to take you out of your graves and bring you el Admat Yisrael. So they weren't in Admat Yisrael. So this is very clear over here. Ha-pasuk hazeh mechiyach, this verse proves ki b'chutz l'aretz yichyu k'moy me'asiyach Yisrael. Those buried outside of Israel are going to come back to life. They will be resurrected just like the Jew living in Israel. I'm going to take. V'ha'alesi etchem mikivreichel, I'm going to take you out of your graves. And then I'm going to bring you to the land of Israel. So it's pretty clear that it's even hard to understand why the Gemara doesn't quote this verse. Like, it's pretty clear that, you know, people are going to come back. But it also seems from the Medrash and from the Yerushalmi that they're not going to be alive until they get to the land of Israel. Well, if they're not alive, like Mrs. Patterns is asking, well, in that case, then what's the problem? What's the issue even? That's a good question. And Eitz Yosef in his commentary is very clear. The Hainu, you know what this business, this rolling thing is? Kodem sheyichyu yidgalgalu. Before they will live again, they will roll. Derech mechilot. Vesham yitim behem ruachayim. In Israel, they'll receive the spirit of life. The Matnas Kahuna, quoting the Yerushalmi, says, don't think it's a fun process. It's clear that as a tzar, there's pain over there. It's pain. It's painful. But it's a process that in the end, it works out okay. What's going on here? How do you make heads or tails out of this? I was talking to my father today. I said to him, by the way, Todd, did you ever like deal with the subject? Like, he goes, I don't understand the word that's going on over there. I said, no, that would be, that's Torah. You can't just say you don't understand the word. He says, what do you got? How are you going to figure it out? How can you make any, how can you make heads and tails? I don't know, when I have to figure something out. It's Torah. It has to make sense to us. On some level, we got to figure this out. He said, okay, have fun, figure it out. I think I did. I'm going to call him tomorrow. I'll come to this soon. Okay, so this is the gist of my thesis. And once I get past my thesis, then I'm going to show you like a lot of the different mefarshim, right? And I mean, I think you'll see how it all like kind of comes together. So patterns ask you a really good question. It's a really good question. The question is, you're dead anyway. Who cares? The Mishnah tells us in Masechet Avot that marba basar, marba rima. Don't think that excess, physical excess, is a good thing. In the modern vernacular, nobody likes to be corpulent today. They used to say, you look prosperous if you're corpulent. If you were thin, they would say you're emaciated. Maybe some of us still had a bubby who talked like that. A bubby would say, you're so skinny, what's with you? You gotta eat some more. So people love excess. They love excesses. They love lots of food and lots of fun and lots of house and lots of toys and lots of wardrobe. Everybody loves all kinds of things. People love. You know what they don't love? They don't love lots of sermon. They don't love lots of classes. They don't love lots of people asking them for tzedakah. They don't love those things. But they love lots of fun and food. So the Mishnah is like pretty sharp. The Mishnah says, marbe basa, marbe rima. What do you think? So you're going to be the guy with the biggest muscles, and you're going to have the most body mass, and you're going to be the strongest. And what are you going to do? You're going to be providing more fodder for the creepy crawlers who take care of you afterwards. So he asked the question, who cares? I'm dead. Who cares? When I'm alive, I was Hulk Hogan. Now who cares? So the commentaries in the Mishnah say, they quote the Gemara as saying that worms going through the flesh are like kecharoves leguf, it's like a needle. That is to say that there is some kind of feeling for the body in the ground. It's not so simple. In that case, you're going to say, who wants to be buried? Oh, you don't even go there. It's a lot worse. It's a lot worse. The person who gets cremated, there's endless pain, infinite pain, forever pain. Heaven forfend, terrible stuff. Person doesn't get buried properly, the neshama is trapped there. The neshama can't be released. It's awful. Burial is the best option we have. But it's not that great. It's not that great. People say, how's your day going? I say, fantastic. They say, really? Having a fantastic day? I say, every day in this side of the grass is fantastic. It's fantastic. It's fantastic to be alive, Baruch Hashem. It's not so simple to say that there isn't some kind of pain and suffering that happens underneath the ground. We have a pasuk, a verse, which Moshe Rabbeinu says, "V'chiper ad Moshe Amay," that the soil brings atonement, the pain of death brings atonement, the decomposition brings atonement. It's atonement. It's not so pashut. It's not so pashut. We have a teaching, and I could have three tables full of books if I would find you every single source, but there are sources where real tzaddikim don't decompose. Their bodies remain intact. And there are stories in the last century of tzaddikim who had to be exhumed months and some years later, and they were found intact. Tzaddikim don't decompose. Real tzaddikim. I heard a story from my great-grandmother, Allah Hashalom, my mother's mother's mother, who lived to be over 100 years old, and she survived the Holocaust. But most of her family didn't. Of 11 siblings, she was one survivor. And her father was hiding out from the Nazis because it was the first, before they deported, the first they were doing the purges. And her father was a highly respected person. Lived in Budapest. They called him Nachman Friedman. That was his name. He's a Kohen. And the story goes, people considered him to be a tzaddik. People spoke of him. That's what I heard to my Alta Babi. And people come to him for brachas. He had his wife, who actually survived the war. She was, I think her name was Babi Bela. That's my mother's great-grandma, you imagine? Survived a little few years after the war. She was a very, very intelligent and virtuous woman. She ran a business. And he would come into the business for like a little time during the day, and she was like, go home, go to the Beis Medrash. And he spent most of his time studying and praying and counseling people. That's the kind of life he lived. He's a righteous man. I heard this story from my great-grandmother, who heard it from the person who was there. So there's this, they were hiding out from the Nazis already. And this Gentile neighbor of theirs comes one day ashen-faced, and he says, you need to come help me. And they're like, what's up? And he says, tells them the story that your father keeps coming to me in a dream, telling me I need to be buried. So my great-grandmother's older sister, who was already a grandmother by the time the war started, she was one of the youngest. She ran what was called a sanatorium. She ran a home for, in today's day and age, it was called people with special needs. That's what she did. She had a little home for these people. And the first people the Nazis killed were these people. But they were looking for my great-great-grandfather because they wanted to kill the prominent Jews to terrorize the population. So he was hiding in the sanatorium, and they came there to kill all these addled people, and they shot him as well. And nobody knew. There was no communication. So he says, he keeps coming and saying, come bury me. I heard this from my great-grandmother, not the Baba Mises. It was weeks after the event. And everybody in the house was very badly decomposed. Unfortunately, I know what this is. I saw a body after a week. I know what it is after a week. I can't even imagine what it is after weeks. And he was intact as if he was shot 5 minutes before. I heard this from my Baba. Okay, Baba Maisa. This is a real Baba Maisa. This is a story. There was Chassidim who had to move the Rebbe Rashab. He's buried in Rostov on Don, which is the south of Russia, where he was running away during World War I. And they had to move the coffin. It was many months after. Everything was whole. Nobody else was whole, but everything was whole. There are stories. There are real stories. On Gimel Tammuz, when they dug the grave, the Rebbe is right next to the Friedrich Rebbe. They could see the coffin. Friedrich Rebbe's coffin is intact. Over 40 years later. So we have this business that tzaddikim don't decompose. And the upshot is the decomposition is painful. It's painful for the soul. And there is a part of the neshama that never body that never decomposes. It's called the etzem luz. So why am I, what difference does that make? So what? So what? So let's say I'm right. Let's say that real tzaddikim, if you want to be a skeptic, you could be a skeptic. I believe it. Real tzaddikim don't decompose. The body remains whole. Okay, fine. Why? Because decomposition is painful. And the tzaddik doesn't need to have any atonement. He's a tzaddik. Okay. What does that have to do with Gilgul and not Gilgul? If a tunnel opens up or a tunnel doesn't open up. So this is where quantum physics gave me an understanding of this. If a tunnel doesn't open up, then how in heaven do you get to Israel? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand. They're going to tunnel through Megalgalon. Megalgalon through what? How do you get through solid? There's thousands of miles of earth. How are you getting through?
Hashem creates the tunnels, yes.
Hashem creates the tunnels, miraculous tunnels. Okay, so if there's miraculous tunnels, but that's what the tzaddikim get. The non-tzaddikim, they don't get tunnels. So well, pray tell, if they don't get tunnels, how do they get to them? It's not making any sense to me. Even the tunnels doesn't sound like that much fun. Unless it's some kind of lightning speed travel.
Isn't there a time when Hashem put two lands together that it wasn't?
Yeah, but you're buried here. I mean, like, you're buried in Canada. Israel's a long distance. Hashem could do anything. Then why does it have to be painful? What, does God have to spite us? What?
It doesn't have to be at all.
What is this? The Bible said, why do you have to, you're going to bring us back to life. So first you have to torture us. First you have to make us roll through the ground. But the guy died and he got decomposed. And now he has to roll through the ground too. And the other guy living in Israel is laughing. Ha ha ha, I'm just going to pop out of the world. Like, what's going on over here? If God's making miracles, then make a miracle. What is the problem? What is the issue here? And it's not a new body. It doesn't say, yeah, Hashem's going to create a new body. Yichyu meisecha, those who lived will live again. And even though the body decomposes, there is DNA left in a tiny bone. And that's where the whole body's going to be rebuilt from, which today it makes sense to us, scientifically, from DNA. So I started doing research. Like, how do you get through something solid? And very interestingly, in quantum physics, there's something that's called quantum tunneling. Now, I'm not a great physicist, but this is as I understand it. If you have, for example, a ball, and the ball is rolling, how does it get over the hill? The answer is it has to have kinetic energy to propel it over the hill. And depending on mass and weight and how much kinetic energy you go over. Okay. We can never, ever predict with certainty how something will land when it's in motion. Why? This is called the Heisenberg principle of uncertainty. The Heisenberg principle of uncertainty is based on the matter of fact that when something is in a state of velocity, it's impossible to know where the nuclei is. Because the energy, it's in motion, so it's impossible to know. The only way to predict with certainty is if you know where the nuclei is, because ultimately quantum physics is what makes regular physics go around. So if you don't know where the nuclei is, then you're not able to make an accurate prediction, which introduces the principle of uncertainty. So Newton's law of being sure of predictability is basically derailed by Heisenberg's principle of uncertainty. Newtonian science is great for regular physics, not for quantum physics. Once you get to things on a quantum level, all of a sudden, all the bets are off. So in quantum physics, there's this concept. It's an equation. It's very hard to visualize. But on a quantum level, a particle, the energy, actually can get through. How would it get through? So the answer is the nuclei is in a state of motion. So the terminology that's used is waves. They use the metaphor of a wave of light. A wave means that it goes up like this. It's constantly moving. And then there's probability. There's the high point is the probability of where it is. The low point is the lowest level of probability. But somewhere between those two poles, it's moving. And when it's moving, it can actually get through something solid. Which means, in theory, light can penetrate something which is solid. Whether it'll appear to be a photon on the other side is an interesting question. Possibly. Maybe possibly the kind of photon that you wouldn't have the ability to detect with the naked eye, but maybe if you had night vision goggles that magnifies things hundreds of thousands of millions of times, you would be able to see.
Even things that appear solid to us aren't solid, because the atoms are spaces.
Quantum physics. Quantum physics means that there's a whole reality that we don't really see. So in a way of waves, it can get through. Now, within this whole equation, there's also something called reverse or extraordinary decomposition. I forget the exact terminology. If somebody watching is familiar, I don't know why we're blurry. There we are. Why are we blurry? Oh, now we're clear again. There's an extraordinary level of decomposition. It has to do something with the equation of where there's, so to speak, where there's an angle, because the light refracts. So at the point when the light refracts, there's the light dips. Like if you had like two angles coming like this, so on this side with the refraction, there would be light that's going down, but it disappears right away. There are ways to be able to preserve it or be able to see it. And the point is this. The point is that the smaller something is, the more it's enabled to travel. So we're not just talking about decomposition on a physical level. We're talking decomposition on a quantum level, on a level that we may not even have an idea of how to fathom. This is actually beyond what we may be able to think of. We certainly can't visualize this. I don't even know if the equations that we have today would work to tell us how much something would have to decompose, on what level, what micro quantum level the decomposition. But in order to travel through something solid, if something becomes minuscule enough on a quantum level, it could travel. And this is called quantum tunneling. Okay, so I'm saying to myself, right, you're buried in Canada. You got to get to Israel. How are you making it from Canada to Israel? Well, come out of the ground. No, you can't come out of the ground. Because when you're dead, you're in dead, and you got to go be in the dead. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra that talks about a guy who was digging in his backyard, and he found a person. He said, who are you? He said, I'm dead. He said, well, you're dead. Why are you whole? Because he's a tzaddik. He said, do me a favor. He says, please cover me again. I can't do that to you. He says, please, would you cover me up? That's very comfortable for the tzaddik to be. He's a dead tzaddik. His body's alive. He was even talking to him. He said, cover me up. So the tzaddik is whole. A tzaddik that's whole, he can't quantum tunnel. The person who's not whole is going to have to now experience decomposition on a quantum level. That's got to be very painful. If the maggots going through you is kecharov, it's leguf. It's like nails on a blackboard to hear that, no? It's like kecharov, it's like needles, it's like swords going through you. And that's not quantum. That's not a quantum, that's regular physics. But there's something in the body, in other words, a decomposition isn't in and of itself a painful experience. So if the decomposition is painful, imagine what quantum decomposition must be like. I can't imagine. Thank God. I hope I never find out. How else is the body going to make it to Israel? God is not trying to exact any vengeance. It's just, this is the nature of things. Things, you got to get to Israel. What gets to Israel? A particle. What kind of particle? A quantum particle. A particle of DNA. So a quantum particle of DNA is going to have to quantum tunnel its way through to the land of Israel. But tzaddikim, they're not decomposing.
There you go. We don't want to be tzaddikim.
Oh, sure you want to be tzaddikim. It's great. There's no pain. The tzaddikim have these big tunnels. That's why the Gemara in Yerushalmi says, doiker.
So that's why they took the bones.
That's what. So the Bavli says, Yaakov is afraid, what if I'm not going to be such a big tzaddik? He's very humble. We know Yaakov is very humble. Yosef is very humble. What if I'm not such a big tzaddik? So because he was afraid, he wasn't such a big tzaddik. Now, of course, if they were afraid they weren't such a big tzaddik, what's anybody going to say now? But that's what they said. So if that case, if this is the case, now we understand that a big tunnel has to be opened up. By the way, that's why people want to be buried next to a tzaddik. Because a tunnel is going to open up. And that way, you don't have to maybe quantum tunnel. You can tunnel in a regular way. And maybe for tzaddikim, it's going to be very quick. Now Rashi says that ayim raglayim v'helchem. So it's not so posh. The mafarshim speak about a chelik alikam mima'al. That what comes to you, what comes to you later is the holy neshama. You can live without a holy neshama. It's a godly soul. It's the godly soul you need to be in Israel for. The regular soul, just the vital soul, just being alive, you don't need to be in Israel for that. The holy neshama you need to be in Israel for. So Rashi says, they'll get up. But the Yerushalmi takes the position that it's going to be painful. Yaakov wasn't worried. The Yerushalmi takes the position that everybody turns into a bag of bones. Or a football. So if you're a football, then you have to. There's going to have to be tunnels. The Yerushalmi doesn't look at the whole quantum thing. The Yerushalmi doesn't look at it. The Yerushalmi says it's going to have to be tunnels. Yerushalmi's not quantum. The Bavli doesn't do quantum physics. The Yerushalmi's doing regular physics. In regular physics, there's going to have to be a tunnel. But the person's decomposed. Okay, he's going to bounce, 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 like a bag of bones. All the bones, bags of bones are going to land in Israel, or collections of bones, and then they're going to come back to life. Just like the story where Ezekiel brings up a whole valley of dead people. All the bones start to rattle and get covered. We have a description of what Tchiyas HaMashiach looks like. So he says it's not going to be a person. It's going to have a tunnel. Yaakov doesn't want that. We don't have that. Bavli doesn't, according to the Talmud Bavli, there is no tunnel. The tunnel is only for the people who are not righteous. And now, this starts to come together in a marvelous way. Rabbi Yosef Engel, he quotes the Shailos HaTshuvos of Rabbi Yisrael Bruna, or Rabbi Yisrael Mibruna. So Bruna is early 15th century. Rabbi Yisrael Mibruna is, in his Shailos HaTshuvos, are copiously cited by the Ramah. Ramah Shulchan Aruch. I mean, this is very big, the Ma'ariv Bruna. Ma'ariv Bruna writes, says the Gil Yoni HaShas, Rabbi Yosef Engel, who's 19th century. He says, the oisam bnei adam hamevakshim leilech l'aretz Yisrael, the people who want to go to Israel, but somehow they didn't get there. They will not have to have Gilgul Mechila. They will not have to have this quantum tunneling. Why? Because a person who wants to do a mitzvah, vakesh la'asot mitzvah venenas, and he got waylaid, something happened, ki'ilu asa v'havei k'meis b'aretz Yisrael. It's as if he died in the land of Israel. In other words, that this is not just a physical phenomenon. There's an element of, if your mind is there, then you are there. Which is, by the way, is a phenomenal proof that Rebbe always used to say that every teaching of Hasidus has an origin in Nigla, has an origin in the revealed area of Torah. The Baal Shem Tov has a famous teaching, B'makim shemachshavte shel adam sham hu nimtza. And I shared this actually in some of the previous classes that I gave on the Anticipate or Await series, some of the recent classes, I think in maybe in episode 37 and 38, maybe 39, I talked about the idea. I'm not going to elaborate on it now. If you want to go back and look, that's what we learn about this idea of Shamhu Nimtza. So the mind, it actually translates in halacha. If your mind was in Israel, then you're already in Israel. And then you're not going to have this quantum tunneling business. Rabbi Yosef Engel adds to the words of Ma'ariv Bruna, and he says, the Ma'ariv Bruna says, if a person started the journey, even if he didn't make it, Rabbi Yosef Engel adds, it would seem to me, afilu mishalo hischalalis, even somebody didn't make the journey, rak chishev, in his mind he made the journey, gomer bedaitai, and then something happened, it's considered as if he did the mitzvah, ma'il olav akasav kiloso. After the previous service passing, the Rebbe related a story. He said he walked into his father-in-law's Zebbe's study, and the Friedrich Rebbe was looking at the window. He was very focused, but his gaze was far away. It's 1949. And he turned around to the Rebbe, and he said to the Rebbe, he's thinking of going to Israel. So the Rebbe says to his father-in-law, what will happen to American Jewry if the Rebbe leaves? So the Friedrich Rebbe acknowledged what the Rebbe said. And he said, Ashena Machshava. It's a nice thought. The Rebbe spoke about this after the previous service passing. The Rebbe said that in his mind, my father-in-law, the Rebbe, was already in Eretz Yisrael. Gilyon HaShas. It's exactly what Rabbi Yosef Engel says, not in mysticism, halacha. Incidentally, this very teaching that's cited by Rabbi Yosef Engel is also printed, almost a parallel teaching. It's printed in the Medrash Rabbah. There's a commentary known as Nechma Lemare. From the sources he cites, we have to assume he lived somewhere in the 16th century. So he's a little after Rabbi Yisrael Bruna, but he doesn't seem to have seen his writings. He quotes, for example, the Chesed Lavrom was the great-grandfather of the Chida. And we don't know who wrote it. We know it was a great Gaon. He found these manuscripts, and when they printed the Medrash Rabbah, they printed the Nechmad Lamara. So the Nechmad Lamara, he comes along and he says, what's going on over here? How could you say that the people outside of Eretz Yisrael are not going to live? What about Moshe of Aaron? What about all these Sadiqim? And he basically develops the same, like, I know it's so late that I want to, he develops a parallel line of teaching, parallel line of thought. And he says, Moshe and Aaron wanted to be in Eretz Yisrael. Hashem didn't let them. The Jewish people who died in the Midbar wanted to be in Eretz Yisrael. There's no issue. He says, if that's where your mind is, that's where you are. incredible. Like, again, I wanted to teach it from inside. It's a phenomenal teaching. And little nuances fit perfectly with the business of the tunneling or the mechilas. And you go back to the Yerushalmi, Doikarin, he says, God makes this big cavernous cave. God digs a hole and he makes a mechila. So you're asking if it's physical. It's physical. It's a good question. In 1985, Shabbos Parshas Bereishis. The Rebbe is speaking about Gan Eden. Where is Gan Eden? It's by the Euphrates and the Tigris River. Where is that? They're definitely in heaven these days. That's like in Iraq or something, Kurdistan, right? And the question is, where was Adam Rishon created? Where was he given life? Was he given life in Eretz Yisrael? Was he given life by Gan Eden? And the Rebbe has this whole conversation back and forth in the level of the literal meaning of the pasuk and not. And he says the Gemara talks about the development of Adam Rishon, what he looked like in the first hour, what he looked like in the second hour, look at the third hour. The Gemara gives us a blow-by-blow description. So if the Gemara gives us a blow-by-blow description, then all of a sudden, then it turns miraculous that Adam Rishon gets miraculously transposed. How does it work? So the Rebbe says that there is this thing that there is a Har HaMoria, which it says that Adam imkom kaparasi nivra, a person, humanity was created from the source of its atonement, from the Mizbeach. That the earth, the area of the Mizbeach is where Adam was created from, that there's an actual underground tunnel under the Har HaBayit that goes to Gan Eden. So Adam is transported through this tunnel. And he came up in Gan Eden. And the Rebbe says, there's a famous teaching that clearly states this. It's found in the Pirkei Rebbe Lezer, and the Gemara Eidavim brings it. Shar Gan Eden Samach Lahar HaMoria. The gates of Gan Eden are right at Har HaMoria. But the Rebbe says, that wouldn't work here. Because Adam HaRishon had to get created at a certain time. And there would be a lot of traveling. That's a long distance. And then the Rebbe says, by the way, there is a similar concept about Tchias HaMesim. That those who are outside of Eretz Yisrael are going to travel in tunnels till Eretz Yisrael, there they get up. And the Rebbe said, in other words, that in the cemetery right here, he's talking where the Friedrich Rebbe is buried, where the Rebbe's oil is, what's called Montefiore Cemetery, the Rebbe said, Yesh Mechile Yisra'ivris Ba'afar O'adomo Melichas Ad Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbe said, the Rebbe didn't play games with words, especially when he spoke about his Rebbe, the oil. The Rebbe said, there is a tunnel under Montefiore Cemetery that leads directly to Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbe said it. So who is asking me if this is physical? The Rebbe says it's physical. Darkam Yovayu HaMesim HaKvurim Kan L'Eretz Yisrael. Those buried in Montefiore Cemetery, they are on a highway. They got a subterranean highway. They're good. Hechol Matzadikim, that I'll start with the Tzadikim who are there, and everybody else goes along. Even though, by the rest of the Jewish people, the Zohar says it could take 40 years. Now it's starting to make sense. It's a lot of tunneling. It's a lot of quantum tunneling. Maybe it takes 40 years to get through 5,000 miles quantum tunneling. It's literal. We don't have time. This is like terrible. This is an incredible rumination from the Rebbe, a sikh from the Rebbe from Simchas Torah, 1958. And the Rebbe talks about this idea of the body being returned into the ground, and that even tzaddikim have to decompose for a moment, and for a flash before they are resurrected. But he says that it's literal. All of this is literal. And the Rebbe talks about the relationship that the neshama has with the body, and how the body was able to utilize it as a vehicle of godly expression. And that's why there's a piece of the body, read DNA, etzem luz, that remains forever. And this etzem luz is indestructible. The DNA is indestructible. And even though, surfacially, the body has become earth again, nonetheless, in its inner essence, there's something that remains from the original body. And that's what's going to come back to life. And I'm not doing this justice because we don't have time. But I'm just, for those who want to study more, you look more in the Sikha. And the most remarkable rumination of all is on the anniversary of the previous Rebbe's passing in 1954, Yud Shvat. And this is like deserving of like classes on their own. The Rebbe talks about this concept of why tzaddikim, like the previous Rebbe, elect to be buried and interred outside of Eretz Yisrael if you have all these issues. And he says, because they want to be there to help the people. And the Rebbe talks about these tunnels opening up. And the Rebbe cites a fascinating halacha about the laws of Tumah and Tara. And even if something isn't, a door isn't open yet, but there's an intention for a door to open, you see, if ritual impurity, if a corpse is in a house, so the whole house can become ritually impure. But if it has a door identified, a way you're going to get the body out, then the impurity goes through that area, and it doesn't go through other areas. It has to have derech lotzeis. The tumah has to have a place to go out. So the halacha is, even if it wasn't opened yet, but there's a place that's ready to be opened, and that's where it's going to be opened, that itself is good enough. So the Rebbe builds on this, and again, I'm racing. It's unfair. The Rebbe develops this concept very, very nuanced, very, very deep. And the Rebbe says that based on the halachas of Tumah and Tara, we could understand that the tunnels that are going to open up in Eretz Yisrael, they're kind of already in place. And even if it doesn't open yet, we're already connecting. When you go to the oil, he says, you're connecting not to the Eretz Yisrael of today, but to the Eretz Yisrael of tomorrow. Because the potential, but it could be when that tzaddik gets buried there.
Yes.
That's when the caves, these caverns open up. And we know there's a lot of seismic activity going on in the earth. It's not hard to imagine that it could be cavities beneath the ground. So there's a cavity opens up. And once that cavity opens up, it's already in place. So it's already a portal, not to Eretz Yisrael of today, but to Eretz Yisrael of tomorrow. Mm. Which means that at the resting site of a tzaddik outside of Eretz Yisrael, not only are you, it's like davening in Eretz Yisrael, it's like davening in Eretz Yisrael of tomorrow. That's how real the tunnel is.
That's beautiful.
So this is a very shortened version of, this is what I kind of figured. I have this other little nuances, other little details, but that basically is, I could be wrong. Maybe I'm a sugar. I don't know. But to the best of my limited understanding, I think that this is a reasonable way to make sense out of everything we've learned over here.
It's phenomenal.
It's gewaldige stuff.
It's great.
Anyway, let me just see if there's any questions here that I need to respond to, because I did promise people. Oh, there's a lot of writing here. People were dying. I have an Alex camera. Yes, Sandra, there is, you can see light traveling out of a body. Yeah, there is such a thing. The Rambam say traveling on the ground for people could be a little stressful. People traveling in the tunnels, yeah, I showed you, it's multiple places says that. I see a wormhole in my head. I don't know how to help you with that. You gotta find somebody else to help you with that. Let's see, Aaron, there's once, no, take into consideration what seems abstract to make sense of a perfect sense of what happens. Yeah, this is exotic physics, Aaron, that could be at play in a very real way, in very real concepts, because Torah is very real. Okay, that's all for tonight. Thank you so much for joining. If you haven't yet, please subscribe and share, because I think the more people will learn about Torah, especially Torah that speaks about the coming of Mashiach and the beautiful future that will unfold very speedily in our days, that in and of itself hastens the process. May we merit to meet our ancestors and all of us together, as it says clearly in Sefer Daniel, Hakitzu Verdananu Sheikh Ne'ofer, that those who repose in the dust will rise and sing in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, in the third Beis HaMikdash, B'mheira, Ubi Ameinu, Amen. Thank you.